I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gail Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Bob Kinzel. And I'll confess right off the bat that growing up, I was never the biggest fan of board games. Monopoly didn't do it for me, and not because of fights over who got to be the car instead of the thimble. It's just that the game itself seemed to take forever to play, and I can't remember anyone ever walking away happy from it, even the winner. Sometimes during a bout of Stratego, I would move my bombs, which were supposed to be stationary and thus a clear violation of the Geneva Convention's international board game rules, and I didn't want to risk losing at the game of life, or for that matter, at risk. But maybe I'd have been less bored of board games if I had access to some of the truly interesting and exciting games that are coming out now, including some made right here in Vermont. Joining me today in our VPR studios is Eric Stumpf, the co-owner of a game store doubling as a creamy shop in St. Albans with a name so perfect, it's almost delicious, The Frozen Ogre. Remember, I said almost delicious. Eric, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And from our studios in Montpelier, Doug Shute joins us. Doug is the lead content creator for Victory Condition Gaming, and he hosts a podcast about the joy of tabletop games with his 12-year-old daughter, Sydney. Doug, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, Eric, let me start with you. The Frozen Ogre, definitely on my list of places to visit next time I'm in St. Albans. What do you offer to unfrozen humans who wander into your establishment?
So we do a lot of things. We do board games, toys for all ages, art supplies, hobby supplies, candy, and creamies.
That sounds like an amazing place for kids and adults, actually. How long have you been in business?
So the business has been around for 3 years. We started as a little hole-in-the-wall replacement for a teen center that didn't exist in town. And so we needed a place for people to get together after school. So we opened up a little game shop, just magic and board games to start, magic card game. And then we purchased a creamy store, frozen yogurt shop that was going out of business, put the two together right on Main Street across from the park. And it's been 2 years now.
That's fantastic. And you see a pretty good response from teens in the area. They find that this is a place they want to hang out.
We do have some people that like to come and hang out after school. In summertime, they come by and grab a creamy and go downstairs and play a board game or whatever.
You know, I really have to say I'm going to learn a lot, I think, from today's discussion, because I don't really know about a lot of the new board games that are coming out. And it seems there are a wealth of them. This is not your father's or your grandfather's board game world anymore, is it?
No, definitely it's not. It's an entirely new world where the story and the characters matter. So if you think about the difference between Monopoly and Dungeons and Dragons, where the characters are really what's driving the story, that's what the new board games are more like.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, I think, when I was talking about Monopoly. I got so bored with it, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, you're the car. You're not anybody. It's all about how much money can you charge for somebody landing on Park Place, you know, which only has so much interest, I suppose. But again, with the Dungeons and Dragons, you're talking about you've taken on a role now. You have this entire persona. You've got certain powers, et cetera. It's a way to get more involved, isn't it?
Yes, it's about the identity. It's also about the cooperation. A lot of new board games are cooperative rather than competitive. And so you find yourself working together against the artificial board game gods.
Really interesting. Doug Shute, let me ask you about this podcast that you produce with your daughter, Sydney. What is the podcast called? What do you talk about?
It's the Victory Condition Gaming podcast. We do a lot of content. We do interviews with designers and publishers. We talk about all sorts of things that are going on in the industry. We just have a lot of fun.
We are talking today about board games in a digital world, sort of these analog games that are still relevant in today's world. You can join the conversation at 800-639-2211. It's 1-800-639-2211. And Doug, I have to ask about your daughter, Sydney. Sure. She's 12 years old. Is she an outlier among most girls her age when it comes to loving these tabletop games?
A little bit, yeah. Our whole shtick started because when she was really young, she was able to teach herself to read at like 2.5 years old.
Wow.
So when she went into kindergarten, she was reading at a sixth grade level. And so she was really, really well advanced in that area. So we were trying to find other ways to kind of help her along in like the math and social areas, because those seemed to kind of take in a back seat. So that's how we kind of introduced – we thought board games would kind of do that for her, and it did. And so, you know, growing up, she's always been kind of known as the kid that loves board games. Hmm. And I think her friends – I think that's kind of helped her relate to some of her you know, peers at school. And it's kind of fun because when she has friends over, a lot of times they'll ask to play board games because they know that at my house they have a whole bunch – you know, we have a whole library of games to play.
Something new to explore. And as you talked about Victory Condition Gaming, you use digital tools to promote non-digital games. How does that work?
We do. The channel itself, we primarily do YouTube content, and then we take the audio and make a podcast with it. But we do a lot of review videos. We do playthroughs. We do interviews. We do actual plays of RPGs. So basically, if there's a game on there that you kind of are interested in about, we'll either tell you whether or not we liked it or not, or if you just want to kind of see us play it and see what it's all about, well, you can do that too.
Eric, I'm wondering if you think popular culture is helping keep board games relevant. I'm thinking most prominently of that very popular Netflix series that a lot of people, myself included, really got into called Stranger Things. Mm. And when that began, that debuted, one of the first scenes we ever saw was these teenagers in their basement playing Dungeons & Dragons.
That certainly didn't hurt anything.
Absolutely not.
Did you see a jump in your sales at all for D&D?
I think that the trend had already started by then, actually. We've been running after-school programs for our town and city schools for years before that, and Dungeons & Dragons was always a big part of that. So we've had weekly groups every week since then.
If I can interject.
Yeah, please go ahead.
I think that a lot of this whole Dungeons & Dragons boom is because of formats like YouTube and Twitch, because folks can, instead of – you know, meeting in a basement with only a few folks and maybe playing once every so often, you can now tune in every week or almost every day and watch folks play Dungeons & Dragons, you know, and be a part of that experience. And so I think the whole online streaming of that has really caused role-playing in general just to kind of explode in these last couple of years.
So what you're saying, Doug, it's not one thing or the other. Now you're seeing that the analog world, these board games are adapting to the new digital world.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We got this email from Cole who said, I've been playing D&D occasionally with a group of friends for many years. We're all in our mid-40s to early 50s now. We played as high school kids back in the 80s. It's still fun to roll the dice and test our imaginations. But I've recently gotten back into board games in a big way. Significant catalyst for me was while researching gift ideas for my sons, coming across game review sites like the Dice Tower, mm-hmm. and especially the brilliant Shut Up and Sit Down, which uses its reviews as springboards for explorations of why people play games and spend time together. Eric, what can you tell us about some of those kind of sites, the Dice Tower, Shut Up and Sit Down, that kind of thing?
There's a lot of good sites out there, and they're really useful. As a store owner, I can't play every game. So for me, I go on there and I take a look and see what's new, what's hot, and also like a little bit about how to play it. So when someone comes in, I can talk to them about it and get them a good recommendation about where to steer them. Like, are they looking for something heavy story? Are they looking for something light, competitive, cooperative, whatever it is? And I go there for learn to play videos too, because the rule books are very difficult, and learn to play videos are crucial.
I would think that would help someone like me, because the other thing about board games, I remember going through those lists of instructions and they were written like it was almost like a technical manual for putting together a shelf. I mean, I don't know. It just didn't have any of that appeal, but these sounds like they're much more fun these days. We've got a call on the line now from Jeffersonville. Leslie is with us. Hi, Leslie. You're on Vermont Edition.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling in because growing up, we did a lot of board games in our family as well, and it was great for my youngest brother, who's a paraplegic. And now I've got not only my own children, but four granddaughters, and continued with the tradition of playing board games. And my son still plays Dungeons and Dragons with my brother, Dennis. And without the board games and the role-playing, Dennis's world would be small, but it is so big that he played with friends in home, and he now plays online with people all over the
U.S.
That's
awesome.
That is wonderful. Doug, do you see that when you talk about these things digitally, maybe on your podcast, that these games really help people in ways like Leslie's talking about that maybe you wouldn't automatically think of?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The whole board game community is just so welcoming and supportive, and they want everybody to be included. And so when you connect with people, you know, digitally, and luckily we live in an age where we can connect with people online and people get into the same thing that the same things that we are, and it's just awesome to be able to connect with folks that way now, especially with this community that's so supportive.
That does sound great, although it does raise a question in my mind. And Eric, let me ask you this one. Doug, you can chime in as well.
Sure.
if you like. You mentioned the welcoming sort of community for board games, but we've heard a lot of bad stories about the not so welcoming community of online gaming, and I'm speaking here especially about the way women are treated in online gaming. Is it a little bit different in the board game world, Eric?
I think it is a little bit different. I think that the people that gravitate towards a board game are a little bit different than the people that gravitate towards a first-person shooter action game in general. But I'm sure it's not perfect in any respect. But the communities are a little bit smaller, a little bit better moderated. The interactions, I think, are a little bit cleaner.
Doug, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think no matter, you know, you get a group of people together, there's still going to be some bad eggs and some bad apples. But I think for the most part, you know, everybody wants to include everybody and be supportive regardless of, you know, age or gender or anything. I think that's why I like this community. You know, the board game community as a whole is because, you know, we do make sure that everybody is welcome and supported.
We did get this message from John in Montpelier who says, as an alcoholic in long-term recovery, contemporary board gaming has been a great way to get together with people outside of the typical dinner, drinks, movies, music scene, and that's the usual pretext for adults to socialize. Also, my wife, 15-year-old son, and 12-year-old daughter all play games together daily. Not unusual for me to come downstairs on a weekday morning and find my wife engaged in a game of Fox in the Forest, Lost Cities, Race for the Galaxy. I have never heard of all these games. It's amazing to me how many there are. You're saying yes, Doug, yes, and I see Eric nodding his head here.
Absolutely.
How many of these games are coming out now? Is it a fast and furious pace?
Hey, Eric, how many are you able to fit on your shelves?
There's too many to keep up with. I can't carry everything. But you have to pick and choose for sure.
It's crazy. I mean, and with the age of Kickstarter, and Kickstarter is a large part of the industry now, you know, it seems almost every day during the week, there's a new Kickstarter hitting. It's some hot game that a publisher is trying to put out, and it's just hard to keep up.
Yeah.
And I do want to thank John in Montpelier for sending that email because it's a great reminder that there are things like board games that can help people socialize in a way that's outside of that usual thing, like he's saying, especially if you are an alcoholic, you don't want to be around people that are drinking. That seems like a really wonderful way to do it. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Bob Kinzel. This is Vermont Edition. Maybe you grew up with a game of life or a role-playing game like Dungeons & Dragons. Are you seeing your kids stepping away from their video games, taking up the quest in Settlers of Catan or Catan? I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly. Or something a little more outrageous like Bears versus Babies. Yes, that is a game. We are talking about tabletop games today. You can join the conversation at 800-639-2211 or post on the VPR Facebook page. We're speaking with Eric Stump, who's the co-owner of the Frozen Ogre in St. Albans, and Doug Shute, who's the lead content creator for Victory Condition Games. And before we get back to these two gentlemen, I want to speak with Adam Watts. He is the owner of Carpe Omnis Games, which started a Kickstarter campaign a couple of years back and successfully published his game No Honor Among Thieves earlier this year. Adam, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, good to be on.
So as the owner of Carpe Omnis Games, you're from Essex. You recently moved to Seattle, I understand. So I want to hear about this game of yours, No Honor Among Thieves. Great title. Sounds like it would have a great place on the shelves at the Frozen Ogre. Can you give us a quick sketch of what this game is about and how it's played?
All right. The basic conceit of the game is that all the players are running gangs of thieves in a fantasy city, trying to end the game with the most, like having stolen the most money. To do this, you can work together with other players to stage heists, but working together with someone else leaves you open to betrayal by them.
No honor among thieves.
Exactly. That concept gets taken a little further in that after anyone betrays anyone else, the thieves' code of honor is broken, and a bunch of more dangerous abilities that you couldn't use beforehand start to come into play. The assassin can start killing other characters. The pickpocket starts stealing from other players. Things that you wouldn't do to your fellow thieves before a betrayal had happened start happening.
Is this a dice game similar to Dungeons & Dragons, or how is it played?
It's a card game with, you know, some non-card components, but mostly cards. So there's a bunch of different objectives in the middle of the table, and you put down cards on them representing the obstacles that you have to get past to stage a heist on that objective. And then you have cards that are the different thief characters and cards that represent different things going wrong and different ways that you can try and get past the different defenses on the cards. It's a bit of a complicated game, but it really is good.
Yeah, and it sounds very straightforward, though, as far as the objective. And I'm wondering about the inspiration for this game. Were you inspired by some of the games like Dungeons & Dragons or things you played growing up?
I was inspired by not the games that I played growing up as much as the games that I was playing in college. We were playing a lot of deck-building games like Legendary, which is a game where you build up your deck of cards by like buying different ones from a like common store area and then try to, it's a Marvel superheroes game. So you're trying to defeat supervillains. And I was also reading a lot of fantasy literature at the time. Specifically, there's a kind of subgenre of like crime fantasy literature that I really like. The Lies of Locke Lamora by Scott Lynch was a huge influence on making No Honor Among Thieves. I was reading that at the time that I had the initial idea and started working on this.
Do you think, Adam, that this upward trend of interest in board games can continue even as technology advances to the point where, you know, ultimately we're going to get virtual reality games becoming widely available? Do you see your kind of game still surviving in that realm?
Funny story about that. They actually recently released a virtual reality version of Settlers of Catan, which you mentioned a minute ago on the show. I don't think virtual reality is going to kill board games. I think it might actually help them because you can sit around. The point of board games is like sitting around a table playing with your friends, and if you can do that from anywhere, then you suddenly have a huge new market to sell these things to, right?
Absolutely. Adam Watts is the owner of Carpe Omnis Games, and his game No Honor Among Thieves was published this year. Thanks so much for speaking with us, Adam. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Eric Stumpf, you were nodding your head through a lot of that. You seem to be familiar with No Honor Among Thieves.
Yes, we kickstarted it and had it in the store. We play it actually a couple of times.
No kidding. Yeah. And that one's proved popular?
Yeah. It's actually a really good game. It's really fun.
Doug Shute, it seems to me that something Adam was talking about that we haven't gotten to yet is the communal nature of board games. You are playing with other people, so there's a social element to this. But video games have now gotten into that element as well, where you can play some of these games now with people all over the world in real time. I do wonder, though, if the difference of having those people in the same room with you does make a difference to you in your mind.
I think it does. Yeah, I think I know as a parent, like I like to have my kid disconnect from the screen. And so to have somebody, you know, in front of them and talking to them and making visual contact. And I think that's important. And I think as a society, we need to start doing that more with, you know, each other a little bit. And I think that's another reason why board games are kind of, you know, have kind of come to the forefront of popularity because, you know, I think, you know, we need to unplug a little bit more often.
Yeah, I think parents around who are listening to this right now are absolutely nodding their heads in agreement. And just some numbers here that I find astonishing. The market research analyst firm NPD Group reports that board game sales in the U.S. grew by 28% last year. Global sales increased to $9.6 billion in 2016. That's up from $9.3 billion in 2013. I mean, you know, again, there are people that are really getting into this. They think that this is the real – and so it sounds like you guys are on firm ground here, both of you.
Yeah, I think so. You know, Kickstarter is a big part of the industry right now. Mm-hmm. And each year, you know, it keeps breaking records as far as how much, you know, funds projects for various board games, you know, like pull in. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. So that the market – so you know that there's folks that are just – you know, diving into this hobby head first.
We've got Julie on the line with us from Gainesville. Hi, Julie. You're on Vermont Edition. Go ahead, Julie.
I have been a gamer for many, many years. I met my husband actually at a gaming convention in the 90s in Milwaukee called Gen Con.
Nice.
And we played Dungeons and Dragons for years with a group that started in high school that still play.
And so is this still a big part of your life, Julie?
Oh, definitely. Not so much D&D, which I kind of miss, but I do play a lot of board games and have recently been introduced to a new type of game that I hadn't heard of before maybe a year or two ago, a social deduction game.
Oh, yes.
Werewolves and Secret Hitler and Deception, where people sit at a table or sit in a circle and have to try and figure out who the villains and who the heroes are in that group by talking to each other and giving clues. It's really a lot of fun and is incredibly social and engaging. And even for people who aren't necessarily outgoing, it gives them kind of a format to be with other people and talk to other people when maybe they wouldn't be as comfortable just sitting and having a regular conversation.
Wow, Julie, thank you for that call. And I think that you're echoing some of the recommendations. We got an email from Linda who says, and I don't know if this is the same game you were just talking about, she recommends One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
Yes.
Castle Panic, something called Pandemic. The latter two because we get to work together as a family toward a goal rather than battling each other. And the first because it's fast. And she says, you should try this one, Mitch, One Night Ultimate Werewolf. Yes. Maybe I'll take her up on that. And then, Eric, you were recommending a game for me as well. You mentioned a baseball-themed game.
Yeah, Bottom of the Ninth.
I'm intrigued.
Yes.
Go on.
It's a card-based game where it simulates the last part of the last inning of the game, and it's a very quick, you can actually play it solitaire, I believe, and it's just 1, 2, 3, and you see if you can actually close the game.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I think my wife would like that too, because she's only interested in about the last 2 outs or 3 outs of a baseball game. She's always, why do you have to watch the whole thing? We can just watch that part. We heard from Darren in Woodbury, who emailed and said, a few years ago, my wife and I started playing Settler of Catan. We call it our gateway board game with some friends, and have since expanded into many other areas. Favorites include Small World, Carcassonne, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right.
That's right.
Dominion, Splendor, and St. Petersburg, along with various expansions and add-ons that come with them. There are many others, and there's only so much time in a day, though. These things do take up some time, I imagine. I did want to ask you both, though, about something that Julie mentioned in the phone call there, and that's conventions. Do you guys go to gaming conventions?
Yes, absolutely. I go to Carnage every year, coming up in first weekend in November.
That's the big one?
That's the big one in Killington.
How about you, Doug?
Yeah, I do Carnage as well. It's a great – it's Killington. They take over a ski resort for 3 days, and it's just nonstop gaming. You leave – I'll leave at midnight, and there'll be people gaming, and then I'll come back at 6 or 7 in the morning, and those people are still gaming. I don't think they get any sleep. There's some of them that don't get any sleep. I get sleep.
You already have a chalet booked, though, right, for all-night gaming, I believe?
Yeah, I do have some of the VCG contributors that we decided to – I'll get a chalet, and I don't think we're going to get very much sleep.
Man, I can't imagine that kind of 24-hour thing. You know, you hear about poker players who play all night, but it's the same thing with the gaming community, I'm sure.
Sure.
I should ask you guys both this question, and you know, maybe this is a little bit of a sensitive question. I don't think so. You both seem very confident in who you are and what you're doing now, but we did get this email from Bradley, who says, I'm 35 years old, and tabletop role-playing games have been a big part of my life. I struggled with self-confidence and social interaction issues since I was in grade school, but I was able to meet friends in junior high through Advanced Dungeons & Dragons and some other board games as well. Do you think there is an unfair stereotype for people who play board games, kind of that, you know, nerd persona kind of thing? Or would you guys say, you know what, I'm a proud nerd. I've been doing this for a long time and I have no problem with who I am.
Well, I would definitely say that I'm a proud nerd, but there are people that probably aren't comfortable or as comfortable with it. But the great thing about this is that it's not something that you're performing in front of people necessarily. Mm. So you can get together with friends, and Dungeons & Dragons can be used as therapy for people with social issues and depression, anxiety. It's clinically used.
That's amazing. Doug, you have that experience as well?
Absolutely. Well, this whole, geek culture is kind of, it's popular now. And so it's kind of the in thing to like board games and Dungeons & Dragons. You see, you've got comic books are really popular and, The Big Bang Theory is a popular TV show and that's all about geek culture. So I think people are more acceptive of the fact that we have these niche, hobbies that we are into, and so it's easier to talk about, and once you find out someone is into something that you're into, it's easier to kind of build that relationship.
I'd like to squeeze in one more phone call if we could. Molly is on the line from Jericho. Hi, Molly.
Hey, I was calling because my 16-year-old son and his friends are very into Magic the Gathering, my couple of observations are, I am astounded by the amount of information they can hold about thousands of cards in their head. And many times my son will say, do you want me to explain how it's played? And I say, I love that you love it. I love watching you love it, but I'm not interested in playing it. But I will say this, the community is amazing. He goes to small tournaments in the area. He plays with all his friends. At the tournaments, there are people of many ages. They are incredibly kind to one another. They are fair to each other as far as trading. And I'm delighted that he's found this passion with his friends.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Molly. We appreciate that perspective for sure. And Patty in Faiston actually called in. We don't have time to get to her right now, but she says that learning new games is good for the brain. I would imagine you both agree with that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And these games sound a little complex, too. I mean, it sounds like, you've got to, whether it's a card game or a dice-created game, you've got to keep in character. You've got to remember your roles. It sounds like it can be fairly elaborate. Would you agree, Eric?
Some of them are and some of them aren't. You can find anything on the spectrum that you're looking for, there's a game for you.
Yeah, my wife is not a gamer. Mm-hmm. And I try to find games that aren't, too heavy. And luckily there's all sorts of games that cater to all sorts of types of players.
What does she think about the podcast, your wife?
She is supportive of it. She just doesn't quite understand a lot of this subject matter. But, it's good.
That's okay. I don't understand a lot of this either. I mean, we were starting to, before the show started today, our managing editor, Sam Gale Rosen, was throwing around a lot of these names of games that I just never heard of before. I didn't know that it was this elaborate, but I'm learning so much here, and I think it's fabulous, especially since so many people seem to find that there's a therapeutic element to this game as well. Did want to make one more comment. We got this note from Ray who says, I love Risk. It's a great game. Also very excited about an updated version of Fireball Island, a favorite of mine from childhood. Eric, what's Fireball Island all about?
Oh, gosh. Someone probably explained it better than I do, but it was a game that came out a long time ago. Basically, you're running around an island and the volcano explodes and this actual ball rolls around the board and knocks people off.
I think you explained that perfectly well. Eric Stump is the co-owner of a game store that serves frozen yogurt and so much more. It's called the Frozen Ogre in St. Albans. And Doug Shute, the lead content creator for Victory Condition Games. He creates game-related podcasts with his 12-year-old daughter, Sydney. I can't thank you both enough for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.